Think Realty Nation, it's Abhi Golhar. Welcome to the Think Realty podcast. We have a good one for you today. We're speaking with Zach Evanish from Roofstock about his journey with real estate investing. As you know, Roofstock is an online platform where you can purchase your single-family homes. And Zach is kindly, he'll be jumping on, and we'll be talking about not only his journey, but insights, investing strategies, et cetera, everything that you need to know to dominate your game of real estate investing. First up, though, we will talk about Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas! That's right, you know the world, you know that city. I haven't been to Vegas in quite a while, but you know what, I will tell you, it is one of my favorite cities to visit. But is it for real estate? We'll find out. We'll also talk about some of the metros with the highest average flipping rates in the fourth quarter of 2018, and we'll finish off with a review of Kevin Ortner's book, The Rent-A-State Revolution. That's what's coming up here on the Think Realty podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Roofstock. If you want to check them out, go to roofstock.com. If you're ready to buy your next investment property, check out Roofstock, the number one marketplace for buying and selling single-family rental homes. Featuring tenant-occupied rental properties for sale in over 20 states, Roofstock makes it easy to invest in cash-flowing real estate outside your local market, and to help you invest remotely with confidence. All properties are backed by Roofstock's industry-leading 30-day money-back guarantee. Sign up for free today to find your next cash-flowing rental property at roofstock.com/thinkrealty. All right, it's time to talk Las Vegas. Now, outside of the Sands, and is that still a casino in Vegas, the Sands? I haven't been to Vegas so often. I don't know. I think they're always like, I'm talking to my producer, Matthew. I'm like, you know what? Like, I need to know. I like Vegas. I like Vegas from the activity. There's so much stuff there. But then also, you know, Vegas took a really big hit, just like Phoenix did back in 2008, 9, and 10. So where is it today? Well, WorldPropertyJournal.com did a little expose on Las Vegas. Quote, the Greater Las Vegas Association of Realtors is reporting this week that local home prices inched back up to the $300,000 mark in March of 2019. The median price of condos, local condos and townhomes sold in March also increased compared to the previous month and previous year. The median price of $166,500 was up about 1% from February and up 4.1% from $160,000 in March of 2018. So what's curious to me and what I'm going to be paying attention to going into Las Vegas is the following. Is it heavily still on the seller side? Is it heavy on the buyer side, or is it kind of a balanced market? Well, Carpenter said that Southern Nevada now has a less than 3 month supply of homes available for sale. And that's up sharply from a year ago. But you know what? It's still a balanced market, right? It's been such a seller's market for quite a while. Now sellers have to kind of relax a little bit. They have to let buyers do their thing. And that's what they're saying. By the end of March, GLVR, which is the Greater Las Vegas Association of Realtors, reported roughly 7,100 single-family homes listed for sale without any sort of offer. That's up 85% from a year ago. So is that a little challenging? I wouldn't be considering that that's a major issue yet unless we start to see these homes not have offers for an extended period of time. What's also happened is that about 1,700 properties for condos and townhomes, 1,700 properties listed without offers in March represented a 130% jump from a year ago. So if it starts to go past 60, then 90, then 120 days, then I'll start to get a little concerned. But I'm not concerned right now. I think the market still has to balance out. And quite frankly, let it balance out. It's a great thing. We got Zach Evanish coming up from Roofstock. It's going to be a fun conversation. Like I talked a little bit about beforehand, I'm going to pick his brain about the strategies he's using to invest in real estate, what he's buying right now, and any ideas and strategies and tactics he has for new investors and pro investors that, you know, we can use to dominate. Think Realty Nation, we're back. It's Abhi. Let's welcome Zach Evanish to the show. We'll be talking about his journey with real estate investing, some of the first-time mistakes that he finds investors make, and then, of course, the differences between single-family, multifamily, etc. So I'm excited to share that story and to be part of the conversation with Zach. Welcome, man.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
You guys, so tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do for Roofstock. Let's start there.
Yeah, I'm the director of client advisory services. So My team and I are really tasked with helping investors of all experience levels use Roofstock to build passive income to achieve their real estate investment goals. So I have a team of about 10 right now. And again, working with investors of all experience levels. You know, we'll work with some investors who are brand new to real estate investing, buying their first investment property, all the way up to, you know, some institutions that own, you know, thousands of single family homes and are looking to expand on that portfolio.
Absolutely. And you work with a lot of first-time investors as well. And I mean, I, whenever I connect with investors, I'm always telling them, hey, you want to check out Roofstock.com? I mean, it makes sense because you have so much data as well available on your website. You've got property managers as well that folks can reach out to, and you have really good specific numbers. You have a really good understanding of the area. So it's a really well-built platform. What are some of the mistakes that you've found and maybe you'll coach first-time investors through not making?
Yeah, great question. I mean, one of the things we've started to do a lot lately at Roofstock is really making sure investors have kind of a hypothesis or a thesis before they start investing. And one of the things we've done is kind of break it down to a couple different personas. So people that are really focused on cash flow or total return or appreciation, and making sure they understand the pros and cons of different strategies. You know, we have a lot of investors who will come on and just see a high cash on cash or a high cap rate for a $60,000, $70,000 home and really not understand, you know, the total pros and cons of that type of property, and maybe dismiss a higher priced property a little at a lower cap rate, but not understand that long term, that may be a better option for them. So really making sure understand that, you know, before you start investing, really understand obviously your goals, but really have a hypothesis. Okay, I'm a cash flow investor.
Yes.
I'm buying $60,000 to $100,000 homes, but I understand the pros and cons to that type of property. If I want something super turnkey and, you know, I'm very hesitant on any type of, you know, repair and maintenance or evictions, then I probably shouldn't be buying, you know, those lower priced homes. So really understanding what you're buying and having a hypothesis going in.
That's right, because your lower point homes here, ladies and gentlemen, you're going to find a little higher risk depending, again, on the city and on the neighborhood and where you're buying. That's why understanding location, 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 and understanding the market and why that market has a little lift, that really is what matters. Zach, when I'm buying for, say, cash flow, do you recommend, say, $125,000 to $160,000, $180,000 price range, let's say in the Midwest and the Southeast? Are you finding that those properties are better suited for long-term tenants because generally they're in better areas, but you might see a little less cash flow because of the higher acquisition price point?
Definitely, yeah. I think it's, you know, kind of bifurcated by, you know, the rent level. So generally we see, kind of like you mentioned, that $120,000 to $180,000 home really being the sweet spot, right? That's where a lot of the institutions are buying. I think some, you know, maybe a couple years back were buying some of those lower priced homes, but started to see, you know, in aggregate turnovers a little bit higher, higher repair and maintenance, things like that. So I think that is, you know, a really solid sweet spot. Generally, those are rents between, you know, 1,000 and I'd say 1,600.
I know one of the strategies for Roofstock is to really change lives through real estate investing. I'm a huge proponent and believer in that because I understand for me, cash flow is king and cash flow is queen and cash flow is a rook and a cash flow is a bishop. And you just go down the entire chessboard, right? Like I need cash flow and the more of it, the better I am. I'm just smiling from ear to ear, baby. So how does Roofstock help investors like me, maybe new and also pro investors, accomplish this goal?
Yeah, so a couple different ways. I think, you know, to start, if you are new to real estate investing, we really want to make sure we understand your goals. It's one thing to be cash flow. Yes, you know, real estate is amazing because it can provide that passive income and cash flow. But I think it's a function of when do you need that cash flow, right? So my parents are in their later 60s, 70s, they're buying properties. They need the cash flow now to, you know, provide additional income. But if I'm in my, you know, late 20s or early 30s, I have a little longer time horizon. Yes, I want that cash flow, but maybe I don't need as much of it now. So I'm okay buying a property that's a little lower cap rate, a little higher price, and letting, you know, rent increases and appreciation really help me long term, and knowing that 20, 30 years down the line, I'm going to have a really nice property as well as that cash flow. So I think really understanding, you know, when you need the cash flow, what's your time horizon?
So let's say somebody calls you and they're like, hey, Zach, I'm a really big believer in Dave Ramsey's get out of debt model. And I mean, I have my own thoughts about completely getting out of debt, because there's a difference between good debt and bad debt. But I feel like it also depends on where you are in terms of age. In terms of single family rentals, do you recommend, say, somebody in their 20s, maybe early 30s, buy a single family rental and then aggressively pay down debt to, say, follow a Dave Ramsey model?
I think it goes back to, you know, when you need that cash flow. If you are a little bit older, then I think buying a property all cash makes sense, because then you're going to be getting more of your return from cash flow and a little less from levered appreciation. But to me, the miracle of single family rentals and really rental properties in general, and why I own so many, is the fact that the tenant is paying down my mortgage.
Yes.
So I love using leverage. You know, you can get a 80% loan. The bank's going to give me 80% of the money to buy this property. I can get a 30-year fixed rate loan. Rates are still very, very low compared to historically, you know, and I can have the tenant pay me the mortgage. So yep. I totally agree with you. It's good debt and bad debt. And thinking about, okay, maybe you have to pay off some credit cards and things like that. But I think taking on, you know, smart real estate debt is a really good strategy.
So why would somebody want to build a portfolio of single family rentals versus, say, buying a multifamily unit apartment complex? Now, let's say I have 15 single family rentals in Atlanta versus one 15 unit apartment complex. Can you talk about the pros and cons and advantages and disadvantages of both?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that comes up a lot, especially as, you know, experienced investors start to think about scaling up their portfolio and scaling up their business. You know, multifamily is great because you have all 15 units in one place. But it's also, you know, say I buy in one pocket of Atlanta, and that pocket long term, you know, isn't what I hoped it would be. So, but I'm really tied into that specific pocket. But if I own 15 homes across Atlanta, I can have nice diversification across that market. The other thing, and to me, the biggest, you know, advantage is, say I own, you know, a 15 unit apartment building, it's all or nothing when I want to sell that. And I can only sell it to an investor. So the value goes up and down based on the cap rate it provides. But if I own 15 single family homes, one, I can sell off three. Yes. You know, I want to take a vacation, I want to pay for college. Great. Sell off three of those homes, get the cash flow from 12. And the other thing is, I have the exit to sell it to an owner-occupied investor, owner-occupied buyer. So again, buy quality homes, and you have, you know, they're more liquid because I have multiple exit strategies.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I have multifamily in my portfolio and single family, but I like single family for the reason that you stated, right? I can piecemeal it. I can get rid of it if I need to. I can sell it to a wholesaler. I can sell it to a seasoned pro, a new real estate investor. I can list it. And it's the most liquid form of an illiquid asset class. And that's what I love about it.
Exactly right.
It will fund a nice trip to Portugal if I wanted to, or, you know, if I want to build a pool in my backyard. Why I want to build a pool in my backyard, I don't know. I think that's a waste of water. But these types of things. You also used to work at Waypoint Homes, and you had a lot of experience buying and analyzing deals even at Waypoint. Can you tell me about your experience there, and then how that's translated to your current success, not only at Roofstock, but then even personally picking up properties?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was lucky enough to start with Waypoint Homes, which was really one of the first institutional groups to get into single family rental investing. So, yeah. You know, I started there in 2009. We were buying a lot of distressed, you know, single family homes. So, you know, I made a lot of good buys, but also, you know, some buys which, you know, I probably would have gone back and not bought. So, you know, even simple things like, you know, not buying near railroad tracks, you know, not buying, you know, across from an industrial facility, pretty basic things that I think a lot of experienced investors know. But I think my big takeaway was, I would think, well, maybe this isn't a great home with curb appeal, or, you know, not a great floor plan. you know, but it's a rental property. That's okay. You know, at the end of the day, you know, that same angle people look when they're looking to buy a home is the same thing they look for from a rental, right? You know, is it a good floor plan? Does it have good curb appeal? What are the size of the bedrooms? So I think those things that a buyer looks for are really the same thing that a renter looks for. And especially if you think, like you just mentioned, in terms of making it a liquid investment, you really want to look for a property that's going to also appeal to an owner-occupied buyer long-term. And in terms of, you know, things that I'm buying, you know, my wife and I just bought, we're closing escrow on two more rental properties actually this month.
Yeah, I was reading my notes on that. I'm like, wait a minute, two Cincinnati. More properties this month? That's awesome. Like, that's huge. Yeah. Good job.
Thank you. So we're, you know, I still think it's a great time to buy. So still acquiring properties.
Yeah, so tell me about what your thoughts are on the market. I mean, I have a snow globe and you have a crystal ball. I mean, every time I see you post online, it's always some magical insight into what market is hot and where you're buying and how you're making some really good moves. Where do you think the rest of the year 2019 is going to play out in terms of potential opportunities? Any interest rate predictions? I mean, I know the Fed's already said they're not going to raise interest rates. We'll probably end up cutting them in 2020. Do you think they'll hold true to that word? What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, on interest rates, I do. I think interest rates are going to probably hold where they are, maybe see a slight downtick. In terms of where I'm buying, I'm obviously always buying kind of opportunistically where I see value and, you know, maybe a property that is below market rents or is priced below market value. But kind of on a somewhat macro level, where I'm buying is somewhat tertiary markets, right? Nashville has been just so strong, or Austin, but, you know, having people look at, you know, San Antonio or kind of somewhat tertiary markets outside some of these cities that have really exploded, you know, Austin, you know, 2 years ago, could have bought for 200,000, that same home is 400,000.
Yeah.
So those renters and investors really need to go places, and you can go 30, 60 minutes out and still find really, really good value.
That's right. That's why I love the Think Realty podcast, right? Because there are a lot of folks that will say, no, I'm not going to share the cities or the ideas or the strategies. I mean, I mean, Chattanooga, Tennessee, huge. Nashville, I mean, come on, right? Like, you're finding good numbers. You're finding good deals. For Nashville, for example, real quick, and we got maybe about a minute and a half before we have to end the show here, but what's your buy price? What's the rental amount that you're getting? Give me a sample deal.
In Nashville?
Yeah, in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, in Nashville, you're probably going to be looking close to, you know, 200 to 300,000 purchase price with rents between, you know, I'd say probably, you know, 1,600 and 2,000. So it's a little bit lower immediate cash flow day one. But look at how much rents have gone up over the last 3-4 years and look at the lack of supply. So I'd rather, you know, I can buy it, maybe it's a 4 or 5 cap in Nashville.
Yeah,
but long term, I think that's going to be provide the cash flow. But also, it's a really high demand, more of a liquid investment as well. Look at all the owner occupied buyers are coming back, which as a real estate investor, I love. Right now, I have multiple exits for my properties, but it, also I need to act a little bit quicker, you know, because they're looking at everything as well.
5 seconds, long term tenants or Airbnb?
I'm long term tenants. I want to, as much as I can, operate, you know, separate operations from investing.
Yep.
I'm looking to build a big portfolio of really quality homes, and I want to keep this as passive as I can. I think short-term rentals, if you're open to being a little more active, is a great strategy, but I really want to separate the two. I want to focus on finding deals that my property managers work with my long-term tenants.
And how many properties do you have in your portfolio now?
I have 12 in my name, awesome. And very close to buying a bigger portfolio, I think, is kind of where I'm focused, actually in Atlanta.
Hey, you got to hit me up, man. Like, I would be totally willing to go in with you on some of these things. I think that'd be great. So maybe we can partner on
Love something like that moving forward.
But yeah, congratulations on the success. You got 12. You're adding two more, it seems, this month, and you're going to take down this portfolio. Zach, thanks so much, man. I appreciate the insights and the strategies that new investors and even pro investors should be taking. And then, of course, you know, check out roofstock.com. If I want to get in touch with you, Zach, directly, how do I do it?
Yeah, like you mentioned, go to roofstock.com to reach out to me, just Zach, Z-A-C-H at roofstock.com. And I can, you know, answer any questions you have about our site and help you get started in real estate investing.
Awesome. Zach, thanks so much for joining me on the Think Realty podcast. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Abby. Have a good rest of your day and go blue.
Hey, thanks. Go blue. You do the same. All right, Think Realty Nation, don't go anywhere. Check out roofstock.com. And we have a few more smart tidbits of information when we come back. This segment is brought to you by Narada Real Estate Investments, your premier source for cash flow and investment property. Check them out. Go to www.turnkeyrealestateinvestments.com. Now, let's take a look at some of the markets where you have the highest amount of flipping in the last quarter of 2018. And you can read this story on thinkrealty.com. Just head over to the news section and check it out. Coming in at number, let's do a count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, roughly about 10 cities. Atlanta, Georgia. I would have expected Atlanta, Georgia to be like number 2 or number 3. No, it's coming in at number 10 at 13.8% of the homes in my city of Atlanta, Georgia being flipped. Lakeland, Florida, 13.9%. Philly, where you can go get your cheesesteak at 14%. Palm Bay, Florida, 14.1%. Phoenix, Arizona, 14.8%. Camden, New Jersey, 14.9%. Las Vegas, Nevada. Remember, we just finished talking about Vegas. Coming in at 15%. Tampa, Florida, 15%. Memphis, Tennessee, 16%. And that's what I would have expected from Memphis. I mean, there's a really good rental market there, and there are always some good flip opportunities there as well. Number one, you want to take a guess where it is? It's the city that I'm investing in, Birmingham, Alabama. Sweet Home, Alabama, coming out of 16.5% of the homes in this city are being flipped. The lowest average flipping rates in the fourth quarter of last year. You want to take a guess? Kind of run through it in your head. Let's see. What could it be? Number 10, Kenosha County, Wisconsin. Didn't know that. Elgin, Illinois, Kansas City, Kansas at 6.5%. So it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad market. It just means maybe they're heavier on the rental side. I know Kansas City, Kansas is a great market for rentals. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, same thing. Springfield, Massachusetts. I was going to say Springfield, Missouri. Springfield, Massachusetts, 6.2%. Houston, Texas, New Haven, Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut. Number one, Austin, Texas at 4.3%. So opportunities on both sides of the coin here. You pick. On to a quick book review. Now, I read at least 3 to 4 books every single week, and like the actual physical books. I'm just now starting to get into Audible. Somebody suggested that I do that, and I can like run through 5 or 6 or 7 more books during the week. But one of my favorite books that I wanted to talk about is Rent Estate Revolution. It's by my good friend Kevin Ortner, who's the CEO of Renter's Warehouse. And in the book, he talks about his story, but he also talks about a couple of strategies that you can use to win with single-family rentals. And if you're looking at growing your wealth and growing your cash flow, you have to check out the Rent Estate Revolution. I mean, it's your pathway. It's exactly what you need in actionable, bite-sized steps to get from point A to point B to point C to point D, and then ultimately retirement. At the end of the day, what should you be the most concerned about? You want to take a guess? Cash flow. Capital gains is one thing. I mean, that's why I like the flippers, right? We're focused on capital gains all the time. But if we don't pay a little bit of attention every single day, every single month toward the cash flowing side, when there is a correction, we're not going to see a whole lot of cash flow. So I highly recommend Kevin's book. Again, check it out. Go to Amazon.com, The Rent Estate Revolution. And if you have the opportunity to meet him in person at one of the Think Realty events, you'll even get it signed by Kevin. Except mine's special. He signed his name with a heart for me. So Kevin, you rock. Thanks so much for doing that. And it's been good knowing you. Anyway, read the book. It's going to be great. You'll learn a lot. I've learned a lot. And I've taken notes even in the margins and executing on some of these strategies that he talks about. That being said, that's the show. You got questions for me, get in touch. Go to Think Realty. roofstock.com. And as you know, this podcast is brought to you by roofstock.com. If you're ready to buy your next investment property, then check out Roofstock, the number one marketplace for buying and selling single-family rental homes, featuring tenant-occupied rental properties for sale in over 20 states. Roofstock makes it easy to invest in cash-flowing real estate outside your local market. And to help you invest remotely with confidence, all properties are backed by Roofstock's industry-leading 30-day money-back guarantee. Sign up for free today at roofstock.com/thinkrealty. Think Realty Nation, we talked about a lot on the show. We had a great interview with Zach Evanish from Roofstock. We talked about Las Vegas. We talked about Kevin Ortner's book, The Rent Estate Revolution, and of course, some of the best and worst markets for flipping in the fourth quarter of 2018. You have questions about that or anything we talked about on the show today, get in touch. Head on over to thinkrealty.com. Until next time, happy investing.